When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now you can feel like you're in the audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater with official Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise at ParamountShop.com. Shop t-shirts, mugs, accessories, and more. And Late Show Poncho listeners can take 20% off with code TLS20. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show products with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
Hey, everybody, you're listening to The Late Show Pod.
Hi, everybody, it's Stephen. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, please. I thought I was. Please. After you.
No, please, Becca.
No, please. Okay, well, this is The Late Show Pod Show.
And I'm Stephen.
Yeah, you know him. He's my boss. I'm Becca. I'm an associate producer here at the show.
I'm your boss, but you're in charge of the podcast we're recording right now.
I get to pick, which
is
really fun.
I'm kind of working for you while we're in the booth.
And we're having a fun time. The lights are off in the booth.
Sure.
Just the nice, sparkly lights of the, we're just having a sweet afternoon.
And I'm lit because the window is behind you, so I basically can't see you, but you can see me.
That's great for me personally. You know, I'm in the TV business, but I have more of a radio vibe.
I disagree.
I like the pressures.
What you guys can't see at home is that Becca has what I would describe as biblical hair.
The headphones are probably accentuating it.
No. Yeah. They're patting it down a little bit, but you have hair that, you know, you would imagine that like Salome. Like big curls.
It keeps me warm. Keeps me warm in the winter.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lion quality to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, today on the podcast, we've got a great extended interview that we did last month with the great Mr. Paul Simon.
Oh, that was just great. 20-something like 26 minutes of interview and then a five-minute song at the end of it.
It was like a 37-minute act it ended up being for the podcast. Yeah. We don't have
just
the songs,
great.
Unfortunately. We don't have the licensing there on the podcast. But go to YouTube.
He's not really known for the music. It's mostly him as a conversationalist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what we have on the podcast that you didn't see on TV is he talks about Lorraine, the song Lorraine. He goes through the lyrics with you. Really beautiful moment. That I know that the segment producer, the people who are in charge of producing these interviews every day, Megan shared with us that he really was raving that he was able to do that with you, and he wanted to make sure that existed somewhere. And that's what really makes me happy about these podcasts when we get extended content on them. You know, we're fit with the broadcast time lengths that we have to have on TV to. We got air commercials, we have a monologue, we have all this stuff that we have to
fit
into TV.
All that useless stuff.
Yeah. But there's so much, you know, you run these interviews so naturally and so elegantly that it's really nice that we have a place that they can live in their full form.
It's nice to have room to breathe.
Yeah.
A bunch of people wrote me about that Paul Simon interview.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Baptiste actually wrote me.
Oh, great.
Because we put the Lorraine thing up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Not that you shouldn't be listening... to YouTube, you should be listening to the podcast.
If you're driving your car, it's the only safe way.
Right.
Yeah.
But several musicians wrote me to say, oh, it's so fascinating to see somebody break down how they wrote a song like that. And I love talking to masters of their craft and geniuses like Paul Simon and hearing their own deconstruction of their process, and it humanizes creativity in a way, because you think how could I ever write a song, or how could I ever write a poem? But when you hear him break it down, not like you can go do it, but you go, oh no, it can be done. He's having his moments of discovery too.
Yeah,
I really love that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful interview. Everyone, please enjoy. This is Paul Simon on the Late Show Pod Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's one of those nights because my guest tonight is one of my favorite musicians of all time, and probably yours. He has 16 Grammys and is a two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. He's now the subject of a new docuseries called In Restless Dreams about his life and his latest album, Seven Psalms.
You know, it's not like a thought that I actually even enjoy. You know, I don't like to think, oh, this is the theme of this. I like to work, and then discover. Let me just see if I want this inversion. People say, why is it that you always want to change your sound? And I'm not thinking that way at all. I'm looking for the edge of what you can hear. I can just about hear it, but I can't quite. That's the thing I want. Now, how do you get there? You know, it's a travel, because it's way on the horizon. And sometimes you find it to make something that has magic, you know?
Please welcome back to The Late Show, Paul Simon. It's nice to have you back. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Oh, they're very kind people. But, Paul, welcome back to New York. Do you get to spend much time in the city?
Not as much as I used to, but, I'm here 3-4 months out of the year.
Okay. We'll take the Paul Simon we can get. And it's lovely to see you again. I so enjoyed Alice Gibney's documentary. I saw the first part of In Dreams last night and then interviewed you over at the Directors Guild about it. What I love about it is it has much the same reaction that I had when I was watching Peter Jackson's documentary of the Beatles and their process, is that I love seeing a great artist who I admire going through the process of creating their material to see how they got to this thing that moved me so. Mm-hmm. And it's about your life. It's about the first part of your career with your old partner, Art. But about that process, and one of the things that you say sort of continually in this documentary is that I noticed a big compliment from you is, that's interesting. You know? You're interested in things that interest you. So what was the first song you ever heard and you thought, that's interesting?
Well, I know exactly what it was. I didn't think that's interesting, but I'll tell you exactly what it was. When I was 12, I was a big Yankee fan, and I used to do a score the ball games. You know, sure. You fill out the lineup, and you could indicate this was a base hit, base on ball, strike sure. one. So before the Yankee games, there was a show on called, I think it was called Make Believe Ballroom, but I'm not sure. Okay. And they played pop music, and it was, I just wanted to be there on time for the Yankee games, and the music was so boring, it wasn't interesting. And as I'm filling out, you know, Yogi Berra, you know, the DJ says, I got this record in this morning, and this has to be the worst thing I've ever heard. If this record is a hit, I'll eat my hat. And he plays a record called G by the Crows, which you probably never heard of.
No, no.
Early R&B song. It goes, whoa, whoa, G, oh, 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 G, 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 how I love that girl. And I'm thinking, that's the first thing I've heard on there that I had liked at all. And it was really the first time, I guess, I ever heard rock and roll.
Wow. What year is that?
So maybe 54.
In the documentary, you say that you're trying to explain to your dad, who was a musician, what was great about this music, and you try to explain to him sort of the feeling you get when you hear the lyric, Earth Angel.
Right. My father was a very good musician, and he comes from an era of really sophisticated music, big bands, and, you know, Sinatra, and the Dorsey Brothers, and just great musicians. So he wasn't interested in this rock and roll, but there was a song, it was a big hit called Earth Angel, mm-hmm. By the Penguins. It was a big, big hit. So I'm explaining to him, I'm 13. No, but Dad, look at this. The song is called Earth Angel. You get it? Earth Angel. And Earth Angel, you know, yeah.
He didn't buy it?
He didn't buy it, but I love that record. To this day, I love that record.
Well, you name-checked the Penguins and the Moon
yeah,
Glows
and, right.
and the Five Satins and right? Renee and Georgette McGreed with A Dog After the War.
That's right. And the Orioles. That's
the
right.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You say that when you're writing a song, you know, you consider the sound, the music, before the lyrics.
The music comes first.
Okay. Have you ever been surprised by the direction of the lyrics as you wrote them?
Yes. Yeah, that happens. Well,
like you think you're writing one thing, and then at a certain point you go, oh, wait, this isn't the song I thought?
Yes, that happens. There's a song, it's one of my favorite songs. It's not really very well known. It's called Darling Lorraine, which was also the name of a doo-wop song, which I took. I like that song. So here's, can I recite some lyrics?
I hope you will.
Okay, so the song begins in a way that I often begin when I really don't know what I'm gonna say. The song begins like, the first time I saw her, I couldn't be sure. But the sin of temptation said, she's just what you're looking for. I really have no idea where I'm going, you know? So I walk right up to her, and with the part of me that talks, I introduce myself as Frank from New York, New York. So this to me is like an internal joke, because anybody from New York, they never say they're from New York, New York. You know, so I'm from New York, though. Oh, I'm from Schenectady, New York. But no, I'm from New York. You know, so he's introducing himself as from New York, New York. So I immediately think, I don't know that Frank is going to be all that honest as a guy. We'll see. Then he goes on, she's so hot, she's so cool, I'm not. I'm just a fool in love with darling Lorraine. So a fool in love is like a cliche that we've heard in tons of songs. So that's fine with me. I like a cliche in the beginning. But now I begin the second verse, and what I'm singing, just out of subconscious, is all my life I've been a wanderer. And then I think, that's enough cliches. So I go, all my life I've been a wanderer. Not really. I mostly lived in my parents' home. Anyway, Lorraine and I got married. Lorraine and I got married, and the usual marriage stuff. And then one day she says to me from out of the blue, Frank, I've had enough. Romance is a heartbreaker, and I'm not meant to be a homemaker, and I'm tired of being darling Lorraine. What? You don't love me anymore? What? You're walking out the door? What? You don't like the way I chew? Hey, let me tell you, you're not the woman I wed. You say you're depressed, but you're not. You just like to stay in bed. I don't need you, darling Lorraine. Lorraine, Lorraine, I long for your love. So after he says this, then he's embarrassed. He changes the subject. Financially speaking, I guess I'm a washout. Everything is buy and sell and buy, and that's what the whole thing's all about. And if it had not been for Lorraine, I'd have left here long ago. I should have been a musician. I love the piano. She's so light, she's so free. I'm tight, but that's me. But I feel so good with darling Lorraine. Then the song changes to another section, and it says, on Christmas morning, Frank awakes to find Lorraine has made a stack of pancakes. They watch the television, husband and wife, all afternoon. It's a wonderful life. You know, pun on, it's a wonderful life. What? You don't love me anymore? What? You're walking out the door? What? You don't like the way I chew? Hey, let me tell you, you're not the woman that I wed. Give me my robe. I'm going back to bed. I'm sick to death of you, Lorraine. And as soon as I wrote that line, I said, oh, my God, Lorraine's going to die. So the next verse is, darling Lorraine, her hands like wood. The doctor was smiling, but the news wasn't good. The news wasn't good. Darling Lorraine, please don't leave me yet. I know you're in pain, pain you can't forget. Your breathing is like a memory of our love. Maybe I'll go down to the corner store and buy us something sweet. Here's an extra blanket, honey, to wrap around your feet. All the trees were washed with April rain. and the moon in the meadow took darling Lorraine. Thank you. So that song had two, like, changes of directions. One where I said, oh, you could just change the subject, you know? All my life I've been a wanderer. Eh, not really. I mostly lived in my parents' home. Anyway.
Wow. How often does your own song surprise you? You said at one point in the documentary that...
I like
last
it if
night,
it does.
What did you say?
I like it if it does.
You said at a certain point, like 60% into creating a song, sometimes the song will then start to show you the path. Yeah, what is it like when it doesn't?
Well, you just, it's not complete, you know.
Do you throw it away or do you put it in a drawer?
Seldom. Don't put it in a drawer. I have thrown a couple of songs away where I've said, after I wrote a lyric, you know what? That's bull. I don't believe that.
Can we talk for a second about the 59th Street Bridge song? Because...
Just for a second.
Okay. Is that people love that song, you know, slow down, you move too fast. That for the people who don't know, feeling groovy. Why? People love that song. It's a youthful song.
Yes,
but why do you not like to do it anymore?
No, I loathe that song. Sometimes in shows, if I made an error in some other song, I would sing that song as punishment. No, here's what it is. I come up to the line, and I just don't want to sing, life, I love you, all is groovy. You know, no, I don't want to sing it.
You don't love life?
I don't want to sing it. I'm fine.
You'd rather do it.
I'm fine with life, yeah.
You know, everybody's got their favorite Paul Simon songs, and I've already named a few of my favorite here in this interview. But I've asked several other great artists this. You have to do one set. This is the Paul Simon set, in your opinion. Five songs. What is it?
Well, when I do a five... I'm about to do a five-song set, actually, at the White House at a dinner.
Thud.
But...
I'm sorry, where? I didn't hear that. Those, what was that?
The songs I'm picking are the ones that are most familiar. They're not necessarily my list of what I'd most like to do.
Well, that's what I would like to know, is like, if you were playing for Paul Simon, if you know what I mean. If you're your own audience here, what are you playing for Paul Simon?
I would play as up-tempo songs, Graceland. Me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See, you like that one? Maybe Late in the Evening.
Sure.
Or Mother and Child Reunion. And for ballads, I would play The Sound of Silence. The Boxer, I like.
It's a quality song.
Or even Still Crazy After All These Years. So.
Amazing artists, Johnny Cash, Aretha Franklin, many others have covered your songs. Do you have a favorite or unexpected cover?
Well, my favorite cover is Aretha's, but the unexpected one that became one of my favorites was... I should start this off by saying I was never a Frank Sinatra fan. It's before my time. I wasn't interested in the American songbook. Now I revere it. And Frank Sinatra. But anyway, I wasn't a fan. And in the 60s, he did a cover version of Mrs. Robinson, you know, which...
I've never heard that.
You never heard it?
I've never heard his version, no.
Well, no, it wasn't... He didn't set the charts on fire with that, but... But anyway, I hear it, and he's singing... So ring-a-ding-ding, Mrs. Robinson. Jilly loves you more than you will know, and wine is fine as I can only see. Ring, you know, and so I say, hey, he can't do that. That's No, nobody asked my permission. I'm stopping the record. So they say, really, you want to stop a Frank Sinatra record? I say, I don't care. Yeah, you can't. You don't do that. So a couple of days later, I get a phone call from some guy at Warner Brothers saying, look, please don't do this. I said it was okay to do this. Don't make me go to Frank and...
and Knuckles.
Yeah, so I said, oh, okay. The song became, I love it now. It's the record that I play as soon as the concert's over, because it's perfect Rat Pack lyrics. It's I love it, you know? Not in the way I love Aretha Franklin's thing, which is glorious, but it's so funny.
One of my favorite songs. One of my favorite songs of yours is Slip, Slide, and Away.
Mm-hmm,
and can you tell me about writing that? Like, what was the process like for that? Because it's got beautiful structures, a man, a woman, a father, you know, God, the different points of view of these different personages.
Well, the thing that I remember most about that is it's probably the song that I wrote most quickly. I think it came in less than a half an hour. It just came out. That's very unusual for me because, I mean, I could take months or even a year to write a song. So that came very fast.
When you write a song that fast, I mean, when you write that song, certainly that fast, you go, wait, can it be good? Because it came so fast? Do you have any doubt about the song because it came fast? Should a song feel like more of a struggle
more,
to you?
No, more towards inclined to, this is probably good.
Oh, because it just flowed.
It's, you know, don't touch it. It's got something that it wants to say. And I think that song was, wasn't really about my life, but emotionally, I think it was autobiographical. Not factually, but emotionally.
That song, I'm not sure, what year did that come
I'll
out? 73, 74?
I'll sing it later.
Okay, that'd be like. Great. That'd be lovely. Do you remember what year that came out? 72, 73, something like that?
Maybe 74. Yeah,
74 sounds right, yeah. Because I remember I was sitting in the car, my mom had gone to the Winn-Dixie grocery store, and I was listening to that song, and when she came out, she got in the front seat, and before she turned, you know, turned the engine, she listened to the lyric, and the lyric was, I know a woman became a wife. These are the very words she uses to describe her life. She says, a good day ain't got no rain, and a bad day is when I lie in bed and think of things that might have been. And my mother went, oh. And I looked at her, she goes, that's true. And I thought, what is her interior life like that I knew nothing about?
Exactly.
I'm 10 and I'm looking at her going, yeah, oh, exactly. What don't I know about her life? So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. More Paul Simon after this.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wild Card, wherever you get your podcasts. Only from NPR.
The new documentary about your life, In Restless Dreams, was shot while you were working on your latest album right here, Seven Psalms, which came out last year. Right in the middle of working on this, you suffered a serious health crisis. Explain to the people what happened.
Well, it was not in the middle. It was towards the
I don't know, it was after a while, but I lost the hearing in my left ear. It was a pretty precipitous decline. I mean, it happened over a couple of months, didn't come from any trauma or illness, it just happened. So I suspect that it's genetic. And
what does that do to you as an artist? Like, does it literally unbalance you?
It really, really was disconcerting and, you know, it was depressing. I just didn't know what to do. And so I was racing around to doctors and why and all this. But it's still there. But I have recently had a discussion with a group of people that I know at Stanford. They're scientists, and what they've said, their group is called the Stanford Initiative to Cure Hearing Loss. And what they said was that they're very close to several really big technological breakthroughs. One is they can find the gene that predisposes some people to have hearing loss. I mean, not everyone's hearing loss is genetic, but they can find that and they can flip it off. They can flip that mutation off. So I don't know if that would have any effect on me, but if my children have this gene, that would be detected, that could be. Another thing that they've done that's very important is often when you lose hearing, there's the middle part of your ear is called
cochlea.
The cochlea. And on the cochlea are these little hairs, lots and lots of little hairs, and they convey the sound to the cochlea, and the cochlea sends that on a big nerve into this part of your brain that deals with hearing. So when you have damage to the cochlea, those little cilia, the hairs, they die. They haven't had until now an instrument that could actually examine. The size of a cochlea is about like maybe a quarter of an inch. So MRIs, X-rays, things like that, they're not magnified enough for them to really get an analysis. But now they have a new laser-directed microscope where they can actually see these hairs. So there's going to be a great increase in their ability to analyze the damage. There's also quite a few new drugs that can help in some cases. And the big one, which those things are like within, they're going to happen pretty soon, like my lifetime. In the next year or so. The big, big move is the StelSem research, where they can take StelSem from your body and redirect it at the cochlea, and it will regenerate the cells that were damaged. That would restore hearing.
Did it change the way that you approached your craft to be down a man on in your ears? I mean, No. Did it make you less of a perfectionist? Or no. Are you a perfectionist? Let me start
No.
with that.
No,
you're not.
No, it's. I understand what people mean when they say that, but it's not really such a thing in music, you know. It's something that's either musical, and it's satisfying, or it's not satisfying in some way that's musical. It's not described by perfection, mm-hmm. No. So, if I write something, and I think that's good, that part's good, that part's it's okay. This is good. This verse is, it's good. It's all right. It's okay. What I think is the ear goes to the irritant. So after a while, these parts where I say they're okay, I say no, I can't stand them. They're, mm-hmm. You know. So I don't think it's being a perfectionist to do that. It's like that part is not musical to you. It irritates you. All I want to do is fix it and make it. I don't want to make it the greatest piece of, you know, 8 bars that I ever wrote. I just want to make it so it doesn't bother me.
I had a great joke writer once said to me, gave me advice, and he said, follow your discomfort.
Okay.
And listen to it.
Exactly.
The joke doesn't sound right to you. You shouldn't do that.
Right.
Go work on it. Put it away or
something like that. That's right. And did you do that on your monologue?
Tonight's monologue?
Yeah.
No, I didn't care about that. Yeah. Now, the inspiration for this album, again, which is seven psalms, it seems too poetic. It came to you in a dream. How did that work?
Dreams? Well, you go to sleep.
Really?
You go to sleep, and then these things come into your
head. Literally like a voice say something in your head?
It was a very, very vivid dream, and a voice said, you're supposed to write, or you are writing, a piece called Seven Psalms. And it was so striking that I woke up and I wrote it down. Seven Psalms, January 15th, 2019. And then I put a circle around the P.S. of Psalms, you know.
Paul Simon.
Right. And the next morning when I got up, I said, I'm gonna look up Psalms. I think I know what it means, but I don't know. And I looked it up, and then I said, I guess I should go to the Bible. And I looked at that, and I said, I don't think I'm going to be doing this.
You're not a fan of King David's work?
No, I am. Look, 23rd Psalm, you know, they brought in a pro for that one, you know, because
that
it's
is good.
So much better than the others. The others are like, give me the ability to smite all, boom, get those guys, and the 23rd is poetry. But anyway, it didn't feel like me. But the Psalms started to come out as guitar pieces. There were no words, so I just enjoyed playing the guitar pieces. Then, maybe about 10 months into it, I'd wake up in the middle of the night with words. So I'd go and I'd, like, always between 3 and 5, I'd go and I'd write them down, and if I thought, oh, that could be a first verse, maybe if I wrote this, the second verse, boom, everything shut down.
So if it did not come naturally, it wouldn't work at all?
In this particular case, so I said, oh, great, okay, well, I'll just follow instructions. You know, it's not my idea, it's just coming to me, and I'll do it. And then the hearing thing happened, and I was, you know, so disappointed until I thought, hey, maybe, you know, it wasn't supposed to be this easy all the way. Maybe this obstacle is part of the process of what you're supposed to think about. It's an obstacle. And so, because I'm thinking about songs all the time, I used it that way.
Psalm, you know, we think of, you know, it sounds like song. It is a song, but it's a song to God. Yeah. Are you yourself a man of faith?
I would say yes. Well, let me put it another way. I think we're in an unbelievable paradise on earth, and life is so mysterious, a mystery. Like in the rest of our galaxy, there's really no other life, and we don't know what's going on. So life is incredible. So I think, what a great job you did, your God, with this planet. Excellent. I'm in. And the universe, Paul Simon, hats off to you, God. Fantastic universe.
So your faith is an act of gratitude.
And an act of gratitude. But then I think, if the explanation for our creation is not there was a creator, but there's another explanation, I think I'm no less grateful, and I'm no less in awe of everything, and it's not going to change my morality. I'm not going to think bad is good now and good is bad, because I feel when it's good and I feel when I do bad. So in the two choices between is there a creator or is there another explanation, I like the creator story. That's where I'm at with that. You?
What?
You?
I was sort of convicted of my atheism for many years, and then I was overwhelmed by an enormous sense of gratitude for the world. And that resonates for me because this enormous heartbreaking gratitude, even for heartbreaking things, not because the world is beautiful, but the beauty isn't necessarily happy things. The joy is greater than happiness, and happiness is not the ultimate goal. Sublime is the goal. And so that feeling that even comes in grief, grief with you is an act of love. And so we can both be sad, and yet there is joy there because of our ability to share our love in that moment and heal and care for each other. That feeling that even in that there could be something beautiful led me to an enormous, overwhelming, uncontainable sense of gratitude.
I understand.
And it had to go someplace.
Absolutely.
And that led me back to my relationship with what I now call my God.
Yeah, I understand completely. Yeah.
The docuseries In Restless Dreams premieres Sunday on MGM Plus. Paul Simon, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition wherever you get your podcasts. Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.